Morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, welcome to Net That Haul. If you're up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you are officially a hauler. So anyone from Singapore is a hauler. Personally, I'm in a complete mess. I've just, all the house is completely upended. I've got my green screen back here, which is moved now, look, because the cat's just attacked it. What else is going to go wrong? Lots, I think, today. How are you doing, chaps? Everything okay?
Yeah, good.
Everything's okay. Go ahead, Ivo.
I'm lucky I don't have a green screen, you know, but no, everything's good. Looking forward to the show, so.
Well, that's the main thing. I was just explaining to Gabe off air that normally, I'm very technical, as you know. I normally have my microphone stacked on, put on a couple of books. My books have all been packed because we're moving house. So now my microphone is on a box of Ferrero Rocher. There we go. So if anybody's feeling like you want to donate to the Mariner to buy him a proper microphone stand, then please feel free.
or a new box of Ferrero Rocher once you eat them.
Yeah, that explains
they go quickly.
That explains why I'm getting so fat. As always, there's three of us here at the moment because, again, there seems to be a time zone difference between everywhere else in the world and West London because Nima's late. Gabe's on a hard exit in an hour and a half to go for a meal, so we need to crack on, boys, I suppose.
Indeed.
Yeah, work away.
So anyway, well, there's three of the four Robin Hoods anyway, so we'll obviously let him in when he arrives. So who we've got on today? We've obviously got Gabe at FPL Lens. From Phoenix, but now in Florida, just for this weekend only. We'd see family. Hibbo, Derry, in Ireland. Myself in Singapore, and Nima, when he appears, from somewhere near the River Thames in West London. So we are a global gang, and of course, we've been quite popular, I think, in the last couple of weeks on Twitter. There's been a lot of very, very nice things being said about us, and that's wonderful. But we are, and this is the most important thing for us, is we are very keen on charity. And we want to do our bit. And really, I must put the screen on now. Hang on a second. Good God, here we go. Here we are. Yeah, we're super keen on charity. So we mentioned the word hauler. This is what we like to. Anyone who watches this is a hauler, okay? And to remind you, once you hit that subscribe button, you also become a hauler. And when we get 1,000 haulers, we're going to donate to charity. When we get to 2,000, we're going to give some more. It costs you nothing. It costs us money. Just do it. We're happy to do it. So yeah, please do. If you enjoy what you're seeing, please hit that like. Very important, hit the like button. Smash that subscribe button as well. And I think we're 19 off 700, boys. I think I checked a few minutes ago. 19 off 700. So if we can get to 700 before the end of the show, I'm not going to say anybody's going to do a forfeit today, but we'll certainly think of something for next week.
I'm kind of worried if the growth keeps going the way it's going. Like, what are we going to do at 10,000? Do we have to sell our house?
Well, we'll decide that when we get to it. I never thought of that myself.
I have two kids. I could sell one of them.
I could sell the cat.
Please sell the cat.
Don't sell your cat. Don't sell your cat. Oh, don't sell your cat.
Yeah, I can sell you the cat.
If the cat were the human, the cat would sell you in a heartbeat. Sell the fucking cat.
It bloody would. It would. The cats do that, right? Yeah, absolutely. I put a picture of the cat on the Instagram account. Oh, yes, follow the Instagram account, because Hibbo's doing the Instagram account as well. So if what we'll say is, once we get 1,000 followers on Instagram, Hibbo can do a forfeit.
That sounds good to me. Just to give a quick shout out. I know we've got 18 people watching live here now. Like, if everybody can smash that like button, it helps us with the algorithm. Hit like, get us up the YouTube algorithm, and get us out there to as many people as possible.
Yeah,
make us popular.
We like that algorithm. And here's the pod man. The pod man's here. So do you want to give the pods a shout, mate? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Sorry for the delay, guys. I was opening a bottle of champagne before we went live. But No, but from London here, so it's, I think, 11, just past 11 p.m. on Friday night. Thanks for tuning in, guys. So we're on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and we're just trying to get our reviews up because you can only do reviews on Apple. So if any of you have an Apple device, that would mean a lot to us if you can help us as we're getting started. I think we've only got about 13 reviews. So if we can get to 20 reviews in the next few weeks, I think that would be a nice starting point for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very quickly going to give a shout out to some people in the group as well who's already on. Welcome, Haulers, Fadil, Shams, Crazy Dude, Nehal, Sam, Bungle, always as always, Bungle. We love Bungle from Tokyo. Rubber Ducky. Who else have we got? Ramanthan. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong. FPL Red Arrows. It's always one of the worst things that anybody has to do when you're doing pods is try to pronounce people's names. I bet people are going apeshit normally. And Jared as well. So welcome, everybody, on FPL4P. What's up? Yeah, as he says. So, boys, right, let's...
Listen to your dad saying, what's up, huh?
What's up? It's what it says in the chat. Have you heard this? What's your dad doing? They call me dad. Can you believe this?
Well, we don't call you dad. We call you da.
Well, dad. Know, that means dad. Right. And the last of the announcements before we dive in. Join the mini league, FG1XNB. The link's in the comments in the YouTube. And to remind you, there are prizes. There's still only two at the moment. We haven't got any more. But Matt at FPL Obsessed has offered a great copy of his book, FPL Obsessed, either by Kindle or if you want a signed copy, you can get it in hard copy as well. It's also in Amazon, so hashtag ad. And also, Fantasy Football Fix have kindly offered a one-year subscription as a prize as well to their site and to all their premium tools. So, yeah. So there we go. So, right, I think that gets us going, and we will move on, and let's get into it. So last week, we had a very, very successful and interesting chat on structures. I think everybody, I didn't see any negatives there at all. You know, we talked about fixture swings, we talked about new assets, and we talked about building team value. And this is still very valid. So if you missed it, go back. All this pre-season content is sat there on the channel in nice little bite-sized chunks, 20 minutes to half an hour at a time. So just go in, pick it up, and see what we're all about. This week, we're going to do another part of the FPL puzzle. And that's, and I say parts. I say let's call them moving parts because that's what they are. And that's dealing with the personnel changes within clubs. And again, this is our aim. We never spoon feed people, okay? We don't do that. We make you think. We give you some thoughts, and then you think about it, and then you decide. So we're going to be covering what's new in the FPL. And by this, we mean teams who have changed coaches. So with that, we're going to look at Spurs. We're going to look at Wolves, Everton, and Palace. So four teams we're going to concentrate on today, and who may benefit and who may go into the mud, as they say on FPL Twitter. So how are we going to do this? So we're going to come to each correspondent's going to do one little bit each. I think one team each. And then the fourth one, I think Wolves we're going to do all together. Is it Wolves we're going to do all together? I think it was. But to start us off, I'm going to bring the resident philosopher in. Yes, yes, we've got one. It'd probably been better to have a resident psychiatrist rather than a philosopher, really. But anyway... Gabe, changing teams, changing personnel. This chameleon here, and I use chameleons a lot in work presentations. Their colour changes dependent on their mood, so I think this is really applicable for FPL. So, yeah, this one's clearly had a green arrow, perhaps in game week 38. I'm not quite sure. But, mate, there's a couple of quotes up there. Would you like to give us just your perception on change just to get us started?
I'd be happy to. So the first quote is by Lao Tzu, one of my favorite writers, and he wrote a book called The Tao Te Ching, which for me is maybe the best book ever written. His quote is this: if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. And the reason I include this quote is in order for us to kind of recognize change, we need like a control group. And that control group is ourselves. So we need to know which direction we're going before we start examining how the things around us are changing in relation to us. So it's everything we do, like at least everything I do in FPL is kind of like a self-check first. And then I check my environment. And then we go to a quote from Victor Hugo. Change your opinions.
Hugo. I would have said Hugo.
Hugo. Hugo is juice in Spanish, so I would not say that. Victor Juice. So here's a quote from Victor Juice. Change your opinions, keep your principles. Change your leaves, keep intact your roots. So again, it's taking that knowledge that we've acquired about ourselves and then applying it to the ever-changing world around us, right? Without losing ourselves in that change. So this is the, and yes, I overcomplicate everything, and my biggest flaw in FPL is probably overmanagement. But this is kind of like my process when I make decisions in life and in FPL as well. So we know how we play the game of FPL, right? And we know there are certain things we know about certain assets in FPL, and now the kind of overarching the puppeteer of those assets has changed. We know the assets, but we need to examine the change. So one is the assets that we know. Let's just say Harry Kane. No, actually, let's say Heung-min Son for my friend Hibo here. We know who Heung-min Son is, but do we know who he is under Nuno Espírito Santo? So that's what we're going to be examining today. How many viewers did we lose?
Well, no. Some people say we love these quotes, and there's all sorts of philosophy. What have we got? Let's have a look. We've got
uni lecture.
Fungal. Yeah, it's like a uni lecture. I can't say that. Lasso was part of my third year thesis.
Yes,
said that. Feel like a walk into it. A uni lecture. Spurs philosophy. Go for the best, then go through the rest until you're finding Nuno. Actually, that's what we should have called the show. What a twat. Finding Nuno, we should have called it. It's like a film.
Wow.
God.
Wow, well, we blew that one, huh?
Well, what I'll say is, if this is a university lecture, then nobody can walk out.
We're going to take attendance after and see what people remember from later in the show.
If you don't smash that like button and subscribe, you're not going to do well.
Someone's going to be sending the heavies around.
Oh, guys. Look, my love for Gabe has just gone up another notch after listening to this. I think I might have not walked out of all those uni lectures if you'd have been lecturing Gabe, I think, guys.
Oh, that's very nice.
Right. Anyway, so as always, we're going to let's crack on then. So we're going to start with Spurs. Okay. So Finding Nuno is the title for this one. I think we're going to steal that, John, by the way. That's definitely going into the comments for the YouTube when we put it on Twitter later. Let me move this screen across. Here we go. So, okay, as always, we're always going to have fixture difficulties and we're always going to have bits and bobs about the statistics on the players, and guess who's doing that out of this section? Yours truly, the numbers man. I've already told these boys I'm well out of my comfort zone when it comes to some of this, but I'm not when it comes to numbers. So, right, let's remind ourselves of the Spurs data from last season. So they finished 7th on 62 points. They scored 68 goals. Only Manchester City, Manchester United scored more. Defensively, in terms of goals, they conceded 45 and ranked 6th, and 12 clean sheets, which is average. Right, notable players, of course, Kane, 23 goals, 14 assists, 242 points, 57% involvement. Son, 17 goals, 11 assists, 228 points, 46% involvement. Two massive standouts. Then we've got Lloris, Bale, and Hjulberg, who popped up on some of my research. I'm going to come to that. I'm going to ask you a question about him later. Everybody else under 100 points. Okay, Hibbo.
Okay,
the flaw is... Oh, hang on. I need to do the stats, don't I?
Yeah, well, that's
because the notes never got changed round. Oh God, Gabe, who did the audit of the slides?
I just change the things that I see. I don't change the things I don't see. I don't know. I only see what I see.
Philosophy 101.
So this reminds me, yeah, philosophy again, yeah. So this reminds me to go down the notes. So this reminds me to go down the notes, but that's fine. And as always, half the fun of Met That Hall is everything goes wrong. fixture difficulty. So you've obviously already seen the fixture difficulty, and I've not changed it. So from the underlying numbers from my fixture difficulty, I think this is where we start. I've got Spurs as 2.8 in seventh at home, and defensively 2.9. which is fourth away. Fourth at home. And away, 3.4, which is eighth for attack, and 4.1, which is 13th for defence. So looking at the first five game weeks and bringing in the other fixture difficulties, which we did the other week, and Gabe's just vanished. I don't quite know why. So I'll let him back in. Best treated, Frazier's FDR, it picked Spurs in eighth. And worst was the hub ticker, which is works on opponent difficulty, was 18th. That gave an average of 11.8. Now, interestingly, and I want you to give a shout out to someone right now, Baker did some statistical analysis on the fixture difficulty, and it throws out the outliers. That is a very, very interesting perspective.
Yeah, that was great, Baker.
Applause to Baker. I might use that, but I didn't have time to drop it in. So, from my perspective, Spurs, and with respect to the games coming up, they're pretty neutral. So, they have a neutral sort of fixed difficulty of 0.1 there, and they're around 10th. Defensively, best treated is the hub, goals against, fourth. Worst is Frazier this time, and this comes out as 9 out of 20 in total. Again, they're pretty neutral. Hibbo mentioned the other week that there was a chunk of fixtures which looked quite nice. We might be sleeping. I think you said you might be sleeping on them, Hibbo, or we might be sleeping on them. Wolves, Watford, Palace, 2, 3, and 4. Interesting that they come up, so we might ask you a question on that. Very, very quickly, XG, home, 5th with 1.8 goals per 90. Expected goals conceded, 5th, 1.21. In 1920, when fans were in ground, they were 13th. So they were 8 worse for goals. And 10th, which is 5 worse for goals conceded. And away, their XG in 2021 was 1.36, which is 10th. Goals conceded, 1.58, 12th. And in 1920, again, when fans were in the ground, game weeks 1 through 28, XG went down 2, and their expected goals conceded went down 3 from 8th to 8th and 15th, respectively. So, Hibbo, the floor, finally, is yours.
Okay, so I'll just run through my blurb here. So, Mourinho, obviously, as we know, he was sacked on the 19th of April, and Ryan Mason, he took interim control. So after a bit of a protracted managerial search, they appointed Nuno. So Nuno had left Wolves by mutual consent at the end of May. He'd finished 13th in the league, which it was a drop-off in performance from his previous two seasons because he'd consecutively finished 7th, and he'd reached the quarterfinals of the Europa League. So I think it's worth pointing out that during the managerial search, Spurs had made contact, or they had high-level links with roughly 10 managers. So Conte was linked, Fonseca was linked, Gattuso was linked, although he had a bit of bad history in terms of homophobia and stuff like that. Nagelsmann, Ten Hag, Graham Potter, and even Pochettino. Now, in terms of Daniel Levy, he'd been quoted in the programme for Spurs as saying he wanted to get back to the club's DNA of attacking football. And those sentiments, they've been echoed by the recently appointed managing director of football, who's Fabio Paratici. He's ex-Juventus. So fans, seemingly, they're a bit confused because there's a disconnect between what Levy and Paratici are saying and the appointment of Nuno, because Nuno was available early in the managerial search, but Spurs actually ruled him out publicly because they said that Nuno's style didn't match Spurs' vision. So the hierarchy at Spurs has had a bit of a quick change of tune. So after Nuno's appointment, understandably, now the FPL community got very excited about the Nuno and Doherty, if I can say Doherty, the Nuno-Doherty reunion, because the possibility was that the wing-back formation, like Wolves playing the 3-4-3, that Doherty was going to be such a diamond. So I'm maybe going to pour a bit of cold water in this. So I think it's important to point a few things out. So whenever Nuno managed Valencia, they were a side kind of similar to Spurs, where they were expected to be dominant in games. They played attacking football and he focused it on the wings. In terms of formation, he liked to use 4-2-3-1. He liked to use 4-3-3. He did use 3-5-2 at times. Now, also at Porto, the expectation, because they were such a big team in the Portuguese league, was that they were going to be dominant to try and break down the low block. And again, he largely deployed like a 4-4-2. At Wolves, 3-4-3 obviously became his trademark with his wing-backs. But I think it's important to note that last season, he spoke quite publicly about moving to a more attacking back four. So in November against Southampton, he changed the system to a back four. And while on the night it looked disjointed, Wolves had 20 shots, which was their most for a calendar year. And their XG up to that point in the season was the highest on the night. I think it's important because Wolves were very famous for drawing at half time. I think we all realise that. That was a bit of a joke that, you know, Wolves were always kind of 0-0 at half time. I don't think at Spurs he's going to have as much time. He's going to be under pressure early doors. And I think from maybe a high level, there's going to be a desire from, say, Levy and Paratici. They drive it down, they play kind of an attacking style of football. So we reached out to the community. They look for comments from a couple of Spurs supporters. One's a good friend of mine. He's called Declan Tucker. Great FPL player. He came 6K last year. And a couple of seasons prior, he came 747th, which is like amazing. So in terms of players transferring in, so Declan has says that they've been very linked with a Japanese centre-back stroke right-back, Takahiro Tomiyasu from Bologna. So in his opinion, he's seen very much as a right-sided Brian Davies. He's not very offensive. He could play right-back. He could play the right side of a back three. He could possibly pour a bit of cold water in the Nuno Doherty reunion. He could give the backline balance. They let Reguilon go forward in the left-hand side so that they would have three sitting defenders. Although Declan concedes that at the same time, Davies could provide that balance and possibly Doherty could go forward in the right-hand side. So another correspondent, fan correspondent from the community, Belgian Hotspur, he's saying in terms of transfers and the majority of interest seems to be in central defence. There might be a couple of incomings. If not, he thinks Dyer or possibly even Roden at 4.5 could be options. Again, he stresses the point that Tomiyasu's arrival is imminent, so this must be agreed. He's not going to be an FPL asset. His ability is as a centre-back and as a right-back, and it could have implications for Doherty. Fairly reliable insiders are claiming that he's being brought in to be played as a defensive right-back, which would mean that possibly Doherty could be a rotation threat, but that it could boost Reguilon a left-back. So I think he's very much agreeing with the points of Declan as well. He's also stressing that there's the potential to bring in a backup striker and potentially another attacker. In terms of players transferring out, now Juan Foyth has moved to Villarreal. Vinicius has gone to Benfica. Bale, they didn't have an option to sign him and has loans done, so he's back at Real Madrid. Danny Rose has gone to Watford and the goalkeeper, Gazzaniga, he's out of contract. So in terms of outs, Declan thinks that he doesn't think Kane will leave. He says he's got 3 years in his contract. He thinks Levy will demand a huge fee. He thinks that a lot of the squad are up for sale. Winks and Sissoko, they're not really fantasy options as such, but he thinks they could go. Belgian Hotspur reckons Aurier and Lamela are certainly leaving. So if we look at that from an FPL point of view, it could benefit Doherty in the sense that the Aurier competition won't be there, although Tomiyasu, it sounds as if he's going to join. In terms of Kane, Belgian Hotspur, he reiterates a point of Declan. He reckons Levy won't let him go easily. But if he does, that Son could play out of position as a striker. Although what I would say is, if Kane leaves, it would definitely appeal a son for me because Kane was so creative. As we know, Kane kind of married goals and creativity last season, and he was so integral to the attack. I think he was involved in 57% of Kane, or Kane was involved in 57% of Spurs' FPL goals. So obviously we have a big loss in terms of creativity. In terms of injuries, not much on that front. Tanganga had been out injured. He's been quoted as saying he's coming back, he's ready for pre-season. Chat in the Spurs forums think that he could be loaned out, but if there's a move, they play in a back three, maybe they'll keep him. Now, in terms of changing the coach, Declan started by saying he thinks it's hard to know what Nuno's going to get out of this group of players, but I think it's important to say that he thinks that he will have them fitter than Mourinho will have them. In terms of the new managing director of football, Paratici, he's very much pushing Nuno forward as playing this attack and brand of football. And Declan says, if Nuno goes down the road of the 4-4-2 or the 4-3-3 or the 4-2-3-1, like he did at Valencia, that screams big numbers for him in terms of Kane and Son. What he does say is, if things start to go wrong early doors, he could revert very quickly back to the back three. Belgian Hotspur, he says that Nuno at Wolves was a great manager for defensive returns. Now, we know ourselves that Spurs weren't great for defensive returns last year. They were fairly average, but they would boost Doherty's appeal. He was a big part of Jota's development, and he feels that Son has got a very similar skill set and that Kane's got a similar skill set to Jimenez. So despite the price hikes, he would expect both of them to remain as good assets. There's been talk of Nuno wanting to play two strikers. So if Nuno wants to play two strikers, is he going to play Kane and Son? Son would remain like a very, very attractive fantasy option in that case. So in terms of who these changes are going to benefit, so Belgian Hotspur thinks if Nuno sticks with a back three, Doherty and Reguilon are going to be very interesting picks. He also stresses that Nuno's very good at improving centre-backs. We've seen it with Mustafi and Otamendi at Valencia, but we've also seen it with Cody, we've also seen it with Bolly and Bennett at Wolves. So he thinks that their defensive assets, if they can get their act together in terms of clean sheets, they could be some good picks up at 4.5, as we said, maybe Eric Dier. Who's in the mud? Winks, Sissoko, Aurier, Lamela, they're all being linked away. None of them are really fantasy options, apart from maybe Aurier. Now, in terms of the final verdict, who do we buy, wait, avoid? What Declan says is he thinks Kane will have 2 or 3 weeks off after the Euros. And as we know with Kane, I think it takes Kane a few weeks to get up to speed. It takes him a while to get the match rhythm. And we're looking at Man City's the first fixture, game week one. So he could possibly be swerved. Now, in terms of Belgian Hotspur, he thinks, wait and see how the team shapes. Keep an eye out for the 4.5 mil defenders, Doherty, and even Dele Alli. You know, I think this is an interesting shout because I think if Nuno goes for the back four and he's going to have like a more progressive attacking midfielder, Dele Alli is maybe going to be burnt a wee bit in the fact that he fell out of favour last year. He was an England international and he's now fallen off the scene. Are we going to see a bit of a backlash? At 6.5 million, if he started doing something, it could be interesting. Lucas at 6.5. We've seen in the past he gets rotated. Lo Celso, he's recommending at 6. It wouldn't really be for me. But if he can get the team back under Nuno playing higher up the pitch, you never know. He still thinks that Kane and Son are going to be good assets. But at the minute, he would put the entire Spurs team on a kind of wit stroke of void. The first game, City as well. Basically, watch them in pre-season. Let's see who gets the minutes. Let's see what kind of shape that Nuno's kind of adopting in pre-season and take it from there. Gundy's head. He says if he had to pick somebody, he would look at Son starting out because he's got a good record against City. And they've got a very targetable block, which you spoke about there, Marner, before. So you're talking Wolves away, Watford at home, Palace away. But what I will say about that is it's something I'm keen on. I know we've had a bit of a chat in the WhatsApp and stuff like that. Two away fixtures on there, despite we're saying they're good fixtures. What about home field advantage for, say, Wolves and home field advantage for Crystal Palace? So I think the jury's out a wee bit. And I think the jury's out on whether they're going to play a back three or whether they're going to play a back four. But that's basically the synopsis of Spurs.
Cool. No, I think, and first things first, and we'll shout out all the the fans' views who've given their time and written quite a lot of detail after we've reached out to them, to be fair. So each and every one of you, thank you. We can't do this show without you. The one thing which worries me is, as a person who started with Dele Alli last season, dare I do it again? I've got this horrible, I'm going to come on to Wolves. There was another, I had that very sour vinaigre problem as well at the end of the start of last season. I've just got horrible sort of like deja vu with Dele Alli and Ait Nouri. At this moment in time, we'll come on to him in a bit. Guys, this is it. Let's have a little bit of a debate about Spurs. Feel free, fire away.
I have a thought about Spurs. It's interesting to hear Hibbo describe the back line, and it sounds like a quite a similar thing to what United is doing with their back line, with a right back that's going to be more defensive and hold back, and a left back that marauds down the field, like Reguilón and Shaw, and then having Son on that side as well. It'll be interesting. That piece of it seems interesting, and Reguilón, I think, could be a really good option.
Be still my beating heart.
He's on my watch list to begin the season, but I think I agree with you, Hibbo, that, or with the super fans there, that Spurs are a wait and see for me.
Balls. Buggered up my green screen again by reaching for me hat.
I'm all blurry now.
It's all right. Have I gone blurred as well? I might have to just stop my camera and come back on. It's fine.
Slightly. But I think it's kind of important to temper the excitement in the community, because initially, like, the reunion was in place and everybody was talking straight away about, Doherty's now, he's going to become like the second coming of Christ. And we don't really know that. Like from Wolves last year, I kind of think that Nuno wanted to be more progressive. And I think everybody's kind of having a bit of kind of selective amnesia when it comes to Wolves, because Nuno wanted to change the style of play even at Wolves. And in fairness to Nuno, what I will say is they lost Jimenez to the skull injury, which wasn't great. But I think one of the most important losses for Nuno last year, and I think it's very understated, was Johnny Arrow at left wing back. And they never solved the whole Johnny Arrow thing, because they tried Martial on there, they tried Roman Saiss on there, they tried Ait Nouri on there, and in the end, he lost Cody and Bully at different stages through injury, and he ended up changing the system. So you could look at it and say, did he change the system circumstantially because of his injuries? But he was very vocal on the fact that he wanted to play a more progressive style.
Sessegnon's been mentioned in the chat. So he actually popped up in my research.
It's interesting that you mention that, because Belgian Hotspur he's gone on the record as saying that Nuno wanted to sign Sessegnon for Wolves. But what I will say is, if Sessegnon, he plays left side primarily, is he going to dislodge Reguilón? But at the same time, I think Reguilón had some issues last year with Giribaldi, where he was injured for different spells. So I would have questions about him kind of long term. Is Reguilón going to be kind of the player that's going to play 30 plus games in the season? I would kind of doubt it personally.
I'm just messing with the screen. I'm blurred, guys. So just carry on, just chatting between yourselves while I'm just messing with this.
What are your thoughts, Nemo? How do you see your North London rivals there?
Yes, I think it's quite tough for them. Hibbo explaining the kind of 10 different managers that were touted is a difficult process. It's been a rough few months, and quite public at that. I think it's quite odd they sacked the only manager who'd ever beaten, Pep in a cup final at that time. It was before Pep had lost in the Champions League final. So I heard there was rumours that they didn't want to pay out Mourinho, because in his contract it said that if he won a cup, they'd have to pay him more. So if that's true, like, I can understand like the anger and vitriol from many Spurs fans. So although we might be rivals, like, what I see there is it is a bit weird. And I think it is good that a football man has come in from Juventus, and I'm quite excited by Son, like Hibbo. He's actually someone who, even last year when I first became a content creator, I remember writing about him, and it was when he was going through that crazy patch and everyone was saying it's just impossible, his XG, he's overperforming. And the thing with Son is, I think over 5 years in the Prem minimum, even before that, prior to coming here, he's always overperformed it. So, you know, he's just very clinical. So he's kind of a world-class finisher. And I guess that's the thing with data. Sometimes you need the qualitative data and just watching that player and seeing the way they play. So for me, I think the first few games are an easy miss. I don't really like the fixtures. City by itself makes it tough. I do like Dele Alli at 6.5 if he starts regularly or plays some kind of second striker again, if they did have a kind of front two and Kane was to leave. So maybe Son and Dele Alli could be a front two. And if you wanted to double up on a Spurs attack at some point when they have a fixture swing, that could be quite appealing.
What I will jump in and say here is, like on AFPL Twitter, there's lots of great resources out there. And like every season, somebody's going to pop up with preseason minutes. And I think preseason minutes is a very big thing for us. And like we look to see, it's unbelievable because in the past in preseason minutes, I've picked, like, say, John Lundstrom to start for Sheffield United in the year that he went crazy as a 4.0 defender playing out of position solely in preseason minutes, you know. So I would advise people to look out for that. And if we see it on Twitter, we'll obviously share it.
Yeah, that's great. So I think we've just the verdict, the final verdict for Spurs before we move on, is I think we generally all agree to there are still too many moving parts to decide what to do with them. So no real conclusion. Wait and then assess. But as Hibbo said, and I think it's a fabulous point, pre-season is going to be really, really important. I've already reached out to a couple of people who are interested in content creation and actually suggested that they concentrate on pre-season games.
100%.
If anybody in this comment wants to take that on board and start doing some pre-season watch-alongs and things like that from the perspective, come up with some stats. If they've got a chance to watch a game, do that. We'll gladly share it. We'll gladly promote you as well. Because I think it's very important.
What I will add just to that, Marner, is like we looked at, say, the stats, and we say, like, last season, Kane had like 57% goal involvement. I think Son might have had 46% goal involvement. These boys are like top premium players. And like, despite the fact that Spurs at times can be absolutely shite, these boys are but I'm just going to be honest, like, because we're going to look at the rest of our team, and like, we can't throw these boys in the bin, because at the end of the day, like, I see a lot of teams on Twitter at the minute where people are all, this is my Kane draft if he goes to Man City. Are people not going to pick Kane if he stays at Spurs? Come on.
No. Very good point. I'll tell you what we're going to do is I'm going to hold that Holberg chat back for when we start talking about midfielders. But I spotted something when I started doing my research. So, but in the interest of time, I will move on, boys. But thanks very much, Hibbo. Thanks very much to the supporters of that section. Really, really good. So the next one we're going to look at is Wolves. From memory. Again, it's in the wrong order. But anyway, never mind. So should we look at Wolves anyway, boys? Let's rattle through Wolves ourselves as a joint venture, and then we'll crack on. So let's remind ourselves, they finished 13th on 45 points. They scored 36 goals, which is the fifth worst. They conceded 52, which is 13th, but they only recorded 10 clean sheets, which is not particularly good. As for assets, not very good at all. Patricio, 132 points. He's gone, hasn't he? I think, unless I missed something.
He's gone to Roma, yeah.
Yeah. Neto, the player of interest with respect to that to last season, 5 goals, 8 assists, 124 points off 2,559 minutes. So there's upside there because there's about 25% time where he didn't play. Okay, so there's a potential there once he comes back from injury with a 42% goal involvement. And then all you've got really apart from that is Semedo, Cody, Neves, 109, 106, 104 points, everyone else under 100. Not a lot to shout home about at all. And with respect to the fixture difficulties, so my fixture difficulty, we're looking at attack 3.8. Remember, 0-7, not being best, 7 worst. 16th, defence 3.1 in 6, that's at home. Away, 4.3 for attack is 18th. Defense 3.6, which is 10th. Remember, when you're looking at these screen, when you're looking at these graphics, look for the reds, look for the greens. Simplest way to do it. If you're watching, if you're not, you might need to come to the show anyway, and hit that like button, of course, subscribe. So looking at the first five game weeks and all the fixture difficulties which we compared the other week, Wolves are best treated by Fix and Hub, which is 10th, and worst by myself and Frazier is 16th. So 13 out of possible 20 with respect to attack, and they're slightly neutral to minus. So nothing to shout home about at all. Defensively, best treated by Renfrewshire and Hub, 5th and 7th. Worst by Fix, which was 11th, but an average of 8.3. Defence, again, fairly neutral. And quickly looking through the XG again, XG at home, 15th last season, 1.3 in 90. Expected goals conceded, 6th, 1.31. In 1920, when there were fans there, they were 11th for XG at home with 1.51 and 7th. So not maybe slightly more goal, but that could be explained by Jimenez. We'll come on to that in a bit. Away, 17th. This is last season. So XG was 17th at 1.02. Expected goals conceded 11th at 1.57. And in 1920, away, when there were fans in ground, their XG was 5th, 1.64. And expected goals conceded 5th at 1.25. So that's my numbers. Nima, shall I is it okay to start with you on this?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I guess just one thing to say, we do have Bradley Parker, who I think is the Planet FPL correspondent on Wolves. Yes. He's shared some thoughts on this, which is really nice. So just giving a thanks to him, and obviously we'll link to his socials after the show for anyone listening on the podcast version.
Correct.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of how we look at this, so I see in the chat already there's some excitement about the new manager, Bruno Lage, and I think what Bradley told us was that he's a very forward-thinking coach. So he's actually probably the opposite of how Nuno was. So towards the end, I think people forget the two seasons that Nuno came seventh, and I'd even forgotten about the Europa League run until it was mentioned earlier. So it is quite interesting when you think how well they've done as a team that's only been in the Premier League for three seasons, and this is kind of their fourth season since coming back. So I think with the new manager, it sounds like his formation at Benfica typically was a 4-4-2. And he had wingers coming inside a lot. So I think that makes certain players like Neto and their new player Trincao quite appealing, because they'll become more of a direct goal threat now, cutting into the box. He's actually told us as well that Silva should benefit a lot, having come through his first season and having Raul by his side. So I think the reputation that Lage has is that he develops youth quite well. However, one thing I will say is Wolves were pretty dire towards the end of last season. So this is not coming from Bradley, in case anyone misconstrues that. That's from me. Similar to Hibbo calling Spurs shit, which I thought was a bit unfair, but I might as well repeat the same lines. If he gets to say it, I get to say it. But I love our Spurs followers. I don't mean that. Moving on. So I think the main...
He means it.
No. I want to get with you guys. So in terms of their team, so what I was trying to get at essentially is that they do need a lot of reinforcements. I think they are missing an experienced centre-back, and perhaps that's why they were playing a back three for so long, because it kind of covered for the fact that they didn't really have much going on. I know Bolly was injured and that forced them into the back four, but I have a feeling that they may play as a 4-4-2 just like Lage did at Benfica, so that's quite interesting. So they also need a kind of midfielder who can drive the ball, I think. There have been talks of kind of Neves, one of their DMs, obviously going to Arsenal, so you know they are starting to lose some players too. But I reckon that we can be optimistic, if we were Wolves fans, that this will be a better season in terms of the quality of the football being played. So kind of forgetting league position, just in terms of pure entertainment. And I think I said this on the last show, a lot of my picks in FPL are because of like the fun of watching them play. So I want to ensure that I'm picking players from here. Like, I'm hearing people talk about Podence in the chat. That's quite fun, I think, but I wouldn't go near him. I like the idea of Jimenez and Ait Nouri. I think they're the two I like the most from this team. Ait Nouri, just because he's 4.5 mil. I think he's what everyone wanted Vinagre to be last preseason. Like, we might finally get the 4.5 mil starting Wolves fullback. Touchwood.
Who goes over the halfway line?
You hit a nerve there, Neymar.
Yeah, there is Kobe, of course. I mean, just one, I think, great part. I think that, and of course, Jimenez is going to be almost like a new player when we talk about players coming in. Let me give you this stat, and then we'll discuss it.
Remember, this is Statman versus Hibbo thinking the guy might never be able to play football properly again.
I know Jimenez's form before he got injured was not great, but the season before was excellent. Let me give this stat about Lager.
Bruno Lager. Lager.
I can pronounce that. That's easy. Everyone can pronounce Lager from Grimsby. Lager, when he was at Benfica, his side scored an average of 2.4 goals a game over a 17-month period. Right? Now, you've got, obviously, we've got Wolves have got injuries. I've already mentioned Neto in my run-in with respect to potential for a player who, if he was fully fit, you know, he clearly scores a lot of points per game. So that would extrapolate out to quite a nice value, okay? For me, you know, Jimenez might be a little bit, we'll obviously have to, he's a pre-season look for me, but at 7.5, Jimenez is, nobody can question his potential. Whether he delivers or not is quite another thing. Hibbo.
It isn't intended for me to kind of put Jimenez down, but I just kind of feel that players coming back from, say, like bad injuries that are like, say, Achilles or like an ACL, that's one thing. But the skull injury, I hope he does come back, and I hope he absolutely tears it up. But I wonder, are they maybe going to ease him in a wee bit? I don't know.
I think I would echo what Hibbo was saying, just in the terms of it, if we put ourselves in the manager's shoes, are we going to instruct a player like that to play a physical style similar to what Seferovic played for Bruno Lage at Benfica? Because at Benfica, so when Bruno Lage started having his success at Benfica, playing that 4-4-2, it was Seferovic and it was João Félix, and this was obviously two seasons ago. It was João Félix running off of him. One of the strikers is meant to play a traditional number nine role and be physical and be in the box and be physical. And I agree with people. I question whether Lage will ask a player with like Jimenez that has had an injury like that to play that role. And then I question whether Fabio Silva can play the other role. I'm not sure. I think his movement is good in the box. I don't think Fabio Silva's movement is very good out of the box and like in the build up with the team. So I would echo concern around Jimenez, and I say that as one of his biggest fans. I love the guy. I think he's great for what Wolves was, but maybe he can be a target. Maybe he can drop into midfield and one of the two in the 4-4-2 can push forward. Because Bruno Lage has liked to play, even though he does play a 4-4-2, he likes one of those two central midfielders to be an attacking threat.
Yeah, fair enough.
How do you feel that Traore fits on that system?
I mean, so when you ask that question, I would think more like he could be that physical target. Right, he could play that role. He's not a great finisher, though. That's the downside. But I think of them defensively, and I think Traore would be great for that system when they don't have the ball, which could mean that he may see some time. Right, he may start if he's a defensive fit. So defensively, they get their front two, and they when they lose the ball, they split the front two wide, and the front two and the 4-4-2, they block off the passes to the wingbacks. And then they send the attacking midfielder charging through the middle to press the ball. And then everybody, once that player charges, then everybody steps up. But they do this all the time and all over the field, which is why But you can see how that could leave them vulnerable, right? If that initial line of pressure gets beat, there are a lot of holes that other teams could hit. So defensively, they may not, if they try that, Traore could be that physical target, but his inability to finish may keep him from that. And defensively, I think he'd be a good fit.
Okay. Very quickly, ins and outs. So ins, goalkeeper, is it Shah? I don't know. 5.0, I'm afraid. Not 4.5, as much as we'd have probably loved it to be. Ike Nori, 4.5. Yerson Mosquera, a Colombian central defender. And also Trincao, 6 million right winger on loan from Barcelona.
But I think Trincao's answer.
He's really, I like him. Yeah, I've seen him before. He signed.
683 minutes over 28 appearances for Barcelona, 3 goals, 2 assists, 0.44 XG, 0.07 XA, 3.25 shots per 90.
I think it's obviously tempered by the fact that he's going to come to, like, he's going to have to live in Wolverhampton for one, which is it's a cross for anybody, but well, I'm going to say it. And he's going to have to adjust to like a new league, a new language, and it's going to be physical. But from like the highlight reels, I suppose if you made a highlight reel of me, it would probably look good. But for Trincao, it looks excellent. Like, you know, I think he's possibly an option. Like, whenever the season starts, we'll see his preseason minutes. I think he could be good.
Yeah. And Bendegúz Bola from Hungary. Hungarian. He's a Hungarian. So, right. So, we're going to have goulash lovers everywhere.
Hard to get a bowl of goulash.
So, yeah, an out, Rio Patricio. Vitinha went back on loan. Was it William Jose as well? Vinagre finally went, thank goodness. And, of course, injuries, Neto, Podence should be back. Johnny long-term out. Still, I think so. I think Neto and Johnny are the two long-term problems. I was just looking at what Bradley was saying. He mentioned that he thought Silva could benefit a lot having Raul by his side, and also he has a new manager has a good reputation for developing youth. So I think generally speaking, it was I think the way I took what Bradley was saying, and, you know, kudos to him for giving us the information as well, I think they just want to watch good football again. I think they're just really, Wolves fans really just want to start seeing something where they pay their money and go and get some value. And I don't think they did towards the end. To be honest, it was a little bit negative. So cautiously optimistic was the word.
What I want to add to that is... Mendes FC needs to perform, or else he's going to stand to lose a lot of money. This is his Jorge Mendes. He's got to churn out these players to make his money.
But this is basically a rite of passage for like any kind of Portuguese 18-year-old. You grow up, you get your passport. Jorge Mendes signs you, and then you move to Wolves.
That's it. It's like puberty or your first communion or something.
That's right. So, okay, so very quickly, just wrapping this up before we move on, and then I'm going to give Gabe, because you've got a hard exit at 1:30, I'm going to have to come to you next for one. The fixture difficulties, you know, I think this is one which could... I think there's a lot of moving parts. I think Wolves, there's particularly quite a few moving parts as well. I actually think, I'm quite positive on them, I think they'll bounce back. That's my call. I think we will see a benefit from Jimenez coming back. That's my view. I think Ike Nori is very interesting at 4.5. God help me, I'm going there again, maybe. You could even bench him for the first 3 weeks if you wanted to at that price, and then you've got someone coming in. Because what do we do? You know, so we look at defence over a longer period of time, right? Like we said last week. Okay. Any other views before we move on? Does anyone want to disagree with me?
I think I just want to say on Jimenez, so the one big thing for him will be that he does have a full preseason to get up to speed, and we're not going to want the Wolves players till about game week 4. So I think we'll very quickly see whether he is being eased in or being asked to play that more physical role in the front two, or if maybe this 4-4-2 isn't even what Bruno goes with, and maybe he tries a whole new system with this Wolves team. So I feel like we have at least 3 weeks of live data plus the preseason, and the fact that Jimenez is there for the whole preseason, that's quite appealing to me. Yeah. So yeah, he's quite cheap, 7.5. You know, there's a lot of players you can move to if it goes wrong as well, I think.
But the good thing is we can look and wait, because the early fixtures are really bad. So we can wait. We don't need to start with a player. We can look at bringing them in as we go. So I think it's a wait and watch is quite adequate for Wolves at this moment as well. So, okay, right. So let's move on. So what we're going to say now is just a very quick break, and this is hashtag ad, is that... NetThat Hall have now collaborated officially with Fantasy Football Fix. We've all been using the site. I used them for the team drafts last week, and Nima uses it for the transfer trends, as you know. There's loads of content on there. So if you wanted to sign up, please do with the NetThat Hall link in the comments below. And you get 65% discount for the standard pricing and a free pre-season guide. And then you can upload your squad and use artificial intelligence. If you don't want to use our intelligence, you can always use a robot.
that's what you dabble in, Mariner. You build those
AI,
robots.
AI, yeah. I'm trying to think of some nice little term for AI. I'll think of that. I might come back to that one. It's a bit early across in Singapore. Right then, where are we going next? And thankfully, Gabe, the order is correct. It is Everton. I'm going to come to you. Let me quickly rattle through this data. Everton, 10th, 59 points, scored 47 goals, which was 12th. Defensively, they conceded 48, which was 10th best. They recorded 12 clean sheets, which is pretty average. Notable players, Calvert-Lewin, obviously, 16 goals, 6 assists, 165 points, 52% goal involvement. From 85% of time on the pitch. So that, I think that's maybe just standard rotation, but perhaps a bit of upside. Keane, 3 goals, 1 assist, 127 points. Richarlitroll, if he's 7 goals, 6 assists, 123 points. Again, 30% goal involvement. Luca Dean, no goals, 9 assists, 120 points. Played even less, 78%. So there's a... You see what I'm thinking here is that if players get a run, and we're not saying that Dean will, because he is a bit injury prone, there is upside there. Then you've got Siggy, 122, Pickford, 112, James, 101, Godfrey, 100, everybody else under 100. So I think you've got, but there's a couple of assets there for sure worth Calvert-Lewin most definitely. And on these fixture difficulties, again, off the screen. So my fixture difficulty, I have them as 2.8 for attack at home, which is ninth, 3.3, which is ninth for defence at home. Away, 4.1 for attack, which is 15th, not good. And defence, 3.4, which is sixth. And looking at the five game weeks and bringing the other fixture difficulties, best treated is Hub with goals four, which is fifth. Worst was Mariner and Frazier, 13th and 15th. Gives them an average of 10 out of 20 and a pretty neutral sort of attack. And defensively, I find them, I treat them best actually, 8th, 4-E 13th, average 10. Defensively neutral to slightly positive. Okay, and then if we look at the XGs, home in 2021, 13th. 1.35 goals conceded, 15th, 1.47 per match. And stats in when fans were in the ground, they were fifth, 1.79 plus 8. You know, Everton to me look like one of those teams. Have you ever been to Goodison Park? It's a really tight ground. It's an old school football ground. You know, you get fans in there. That I think that's a ground which makes a difference. Expected goals conceded sixth, which is 1.18, and that's ninth improvement. So not only are they improving with respect to attack, they're improving with respect to defence. So they're more up for it, and they're getting shouted at a lot more.
I've been to Goodison twice.
Yeah, I think there we go. That's my statement about this. better with fans. Away 2021, 12th, 1.29 for XG. Expected goals conceded 8th, 1.46. And in 1920, with fans in the ground, their XG was slightly better again. So that maybe just balances just slightly, 1.53, which is plus 3 for XG. And expected goals conceded 9th, 1.47, which is one down. So there we go. That's my lead-in, Gabe. I think Everton will benefit from stats suggest Everton will benefit from fans, but over to you for the ins and outs of the team.
So you'll see that the narrative may agree with you. This is courtesy of our good friend at FPL Tornado. His name is Casey. He's kind of a low-key guy, but I don't know anybody that knows more about Everton than he does. And I think we have another contributor. Is that right? Was there one more? Or
We do. It was at
Prem Tipster.
At Prem Tipster. Sorry, my notes. Prem Tipster. My notes. The cat is sat on my notes.
Told you. You should have sold your cat. But anyway,
at Prem Tipster. So no, FPL Tornado and at Prem Tipster. So yes, again, right. Once again, boys, many thanks. We greatly appreciate it, and we will shout you out in the Twitter when we put the info out at the end on Twitter. We'll shout you out in there as well.
Yeah. So they say. I mean, obviously, Everton has several needs, including a backup goalkeeper, perhaps a more mobile center mid, a backup striker. The right-hand side of the team is where the team needs the most help, though, where the largest investment should occur. Obviously, in desperate need of a right-back with Seamus Coleman reaching the twilight of his career, which is why, you know, I think many of us have heard that they're linked to Max Ahrens and Denzel Dumfries. But they're really the only two credible links so far. I think they prefer the Dutchman, and Ahrens would be a fallback option to that one. Whether it's one of those two or another player, the profile seems to be a player with pace that can be a more direct foil to Dean on the left. So they, you know, with Rafa coming in, and let me just touch on Rafa really quickly. Rafa Benitez, I've found every time I've tried to define Rafa Benitez, he gets a new job and he does something different based on the personnel at the team. I never thought he could possibly manage Madrid, and you know, you could be critical of the way he did, but Rafa identifies what players do best really well. I think that's one of his best qualities. So the other position of need is a creative winger with pace. While no one has been credibly linked yet, the director of football, I guess he's on the record saying in recent years that this is a position they intend to fill. The fact that they haven't filled it in this time maybe means they're being quite selective with it and mindful about it, or maybe it's just come down to finance that we can't be sure of. But what Casey says at FPL Tornado is that he hopes that position, whoever they buy for the right wing spot, becomes the most relevant FPL addition to the squad. In terms of who's out, he says that Everton has been undergoing a multi-year squad culling after the irresponsible spending of the club in years past, especially under Koeman, which is interesting because it seems like Koeman went in there, spent a bunch of money, did a terrible job, to be honest. But it kind of begun this evolution of the club to a more attacking and more creative style of play. So I think Koeman did leave his mark in a positive way. But that's just my own opinion. So he says many players on the periphery of the first team are in the last year of their contracts, and the club would be happy to sell. Finding a suitable buyer is the difficult part here. So he says that of the players that Everton, this was interesting, with the players who have been who have played appreciable minutes in recent seasons, he expects Everton would field offers for are Bernard, no surprise there, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Alex Iwobi, and Andre Gomes, among others who don't see the pitch that much and are less relevant to our conversations here.
Interesting. Sorry, Gabe, but interesting enough, yeah. Tips that he's suggesting that he would be impressed if they could retain all of Rodriguez, Richarlison, Dean, DCL, Alan, Pickford, and Doucouré. So actually, there's a worry that they might lose some of their assets.
It's possible, but Rafa Benitez is quite commanding, I think, as a manager. I think he could be quite convincing to trying to keep these players with the right project in mind. And there are also some players like that'll get into in a second. Like Casey mentioned players that I'd never even heard of that could kind of change what they do and make them more of a 4-2-3-1, like a quite solid 4-2-3-1. With wingers similar to the way Madrid played back in the days. So let's see. Everton have been consistently linked with center backs for several months. So that could be a position that's also up for sale. Mina is in the last 2 years of his contract, and Holgate has had an up and down career at Everton. They may want to get rid of Holgate.
No.
Moment of silence for Evo. Holgate may be leaving, Evo.
No, Holgate's going nowhere, boys. just for a bit of context for anybody that doesn't know us, I owned Holgate for about 20 weeks last year, and I don't know how.
And you couldn't get rid of him.
I just bought him because I heard about a double game week and I couldn't sell him. And he was on my team right to the end of the season.
Well, hopefully Holgate's going nowhere. He can come right back into your team there. this was interesting. Of most interest to fantasy manager, Casey tells us, are the futures of Moise Kean and James Rodriguez. So he said he considers both of them 50-50 on staying at the club. Moise Kean had maybe the most sellable asset for Everton, so they could get some good money for him after having about quite a decent season at PSG last year in Paris. So I would look for them to probably sell him. I don't think the James market is very hot or anything at the moment.
Yeah.
But let's see. Hold on. I'm sorry. There's a
phone ringing.
Sounds like a Christmas ring.
I'm gonna not unmute it. And it
makes a difference to a jackhammer anyway. It's different to a jackhammer, which we normally get
It's my grandmother's phone. I'm at my grandmother's. I'm visiting my 90-year-old grandmother, and it's her phone. So I'll leave it in there. So I don't know what I was. Oh, I was talking. I know what I was talking about now. So
Moise Kean and J-Rod.
Moise Kean, yeah, J-Rod. Moise Kean may have a chance to play if they don't get sold, and that would be interesting actually. If Moise Kean can repeat. Something similar to what he did last season. I think that could be quite interesting for Everton. It could be a fantasy asset at some point. Many Evertonians, he says, expect James to be on the first luxury jet out of John Lennon Airport when Ancelotti left. But Rafa likes him as well. So he may stick around. Then Casey says, if there's the off chance that Everton can't sell Kean, and the Kane move starts a domino effect, teams may come in for DCL or Richarlison. Obviously, that's a lot of ifs piled on each other. Yeah. So I don't know. We want to get into that much conjecture. And then at the moment, there aren't many injuries on the team. One injury concern right now is Luca Dean suffered an upper leg injury at the Euros with France, but he has plenty of time to recover. He's on vacation and shouldn't miss any time. Now the last bit that this is like the kicker from Casey, and really something that I thought was totally off my radar anyway here. He says Everton is note for Everton is the return of Jean-Philippe Gbama from nearly 2 years of injury. So he is fully fit and highly regarded within the club. If he plays the holding midfield role, this may free up Doucouré to get farther forward. It would not surprise Casey at FPL Tornado to see Doucouré recreate his Watford goal scoring days under Benitez and push forward on the counter.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, thought that was fascinating. If Gamama can come in, if Gamama comes in and sits with Allen, that could be a super solid defense, first of all, yeah. because those two are fantastic players. And pushing Doucouré forward, Hamis on the right, that could be really interesting.
No, and Prem Tipster's actually picked that as well. Basically said that he's been sidelined for years. It's uncertain whether he'll ever be back to his best, but if he was, it would be like a new signing. Obviously, if it would be a very, it would either be a strong backup option to Alan, or if he played, or he could, as you say, play alongside him, which then makes Everton's defence super solid.
Yeah.
So really that's agree.
Interesting. That's Everton.
Gabe, just very quickly, who do you think's most going to benefit? Or let's just open it up to everybody. Who do we think's most going to benefit from Benitez? I mean, look, he's a chameleon. He's gone from red to blue. The fans are going to have some quite tough afternoons in Goodison Park if things aren't going right. Given the clubs he's managed before, right? So, but who's going to benefit from Benitez coming in? Who wants to start that one?
No one. Go ahead. I've been talking for a while.
Well, I kind of think when I look at Everton last year, I think they started the season very well under Ancelotti, and I think when they were always playing with a full deck of players, so when they had Deeney, Richarlison, J-Rod, DCL, Alan, who is key to the side. When they had those guys, they done well. Now, I think we're looking at, say, Ancelotti and we're looking at, say, Benitez. Both of them, without any kind of disrespect, they're kind of coming to the end of their managerial careers. Benitez is just kind of rocked up here. I think he'll make them a wee bit tougher to break down. Now, I hate the enemy colours to the cross, but Dindy, I'm kind of getting Baines vibes. And I think he could be. I think if they can start putting together clean sheets, I think he's going to make them a bit harder to break down. I think Dean was a wee bit unlucky. He created a lot of chances last year. He was a wee bit unlucky with injury. But I think with the good fixtures, I think Dean could be good at 5.5.
Yeah. Just looking at what Prem Tipster suggested, he said given that Rafa's likely to adopt 4-2-3-1, he said benefit DCL as a lone striker. And perhaps Rodriguez, if he stays as the central player just behind. And he said, interesting enough, in the mud, possibly Richarlison, because of that formation, having to go back back a bit. You know me, I don't like Richarlison anyway, so that's right up my street. And anything hearing that Richarlison's not going to struggle, I like that, because you know me, he's my biggest troll ever.
Let me just say something real quick about that, because at the beginning of last season, I wrote a little thread on Richarlison right at the beginning of the season, and I got some information from an Athletic article that said Richarlison actually has, throughout his career, has played equally on the right side, the middle, and the left, and he has been equally successful no matter where he plays. So I don't think in a 4-2-3-1, I think Richarlison has that left side.
Can I just a side note on Richarlison? He's played the Copa America, and he's also going straight to the Olympics with Brazil.
Yeah,
so he's had zero break. So he's not going to start the season. I don't know.
And then the last thing on Richarlison is he's very much a player that is influenced by fans.
Yeah,
with fans and without fans is different.
One other player who's been linked with Everton, and anyone who played Euro Fantasy will know this name: Dumfries.
Oh man, Denzel
Dumfries has been linked with Everton, because obviously Coleman is, shall we say, getting a little bit towards the twilight of his career. Is that fair to say? A very good career, but a little bit towards the twilight of his career. That could be an absolute game changer. That could, you imagine the space that could create for someone like Dean on the opposite side if they're now concerned about what's going down the right.
I've heard discussions where people are saying, oh, if Dumfries signs and he comes in at, say, the same price as Dina, I would still go for Dina. I would go for Dumfries every day of the week.
I think Dumfries might come in at 5 mil. Like, let's hope, but...
Even better. I don't think... I would have to look at the stats, but I don't think Dina had a shot on target last year. and he's very normally very attacking, but
we didn't score.
He didn't score, and like we want defenders that are going to be wide and they're going to get into boxing. Dumfries certainly fits a ball for what he's done for Netherlands.
Yeah,
he certainly fits my FPL because every time he hauled up in the Euros, I didn't have him. Super. No, so I think that's good. I think we've covered them quite nicely there. So just the verdict then. Are we hot or are we not?
I don't have anybody in our draft.
I think Justinia could make it, maybe. Because Justinia, those fixtures are very good.
Maybe DCL.
Maybe DCL, maybe.
Yeah, DCL. DCL at 8 isn't too bad. But, you know, again, what worries me is fans in the ground. You know, they weren't very good attacking away from home. They're not treated very well on my fixture difficulty now, attacking away from home, let alone with fans in the ground. So, you know, is that going to be an issue? It's hard to say. I think the fans in the ground might balance itself out with Everton over the course. I think there might be I think that home, I still could go back to it. Goodison Park is a pretty tough place to go. I think it'll be quite interesting. That I quite like Luca Dean. I don't know whether I'm going to go with him. Okay. A few comments in the wait and see, I think, has also been mentioned. But right. So let's crack on, and the last team we're going to look at today is, we're going to put it on the screen, is Crystal Palace. So Crystal Palace, and as you'll see, the only team with a sea of red across on them. It really is quite horrible. You know, a sea of red across fixture difficulties and across XGs and everything. Really, really poor. Not numbers-wise, statistically-wise, really not at all of any real interest. But we may find on the general chit-chat that they perhaps are not quite so bad. Finishing 14th, 44 points. They scored 41 goals. They're finished in 14th with respect to goals conceded. Goals scored defensively in terms of conceded 66, so they're 18th and they only got 8 clean sheets, so that's poor. Notable FPL players: Zaha, 11 goals, 4 assists, 136 points, 38% goal involvement of 78% minutes on the pitch. Eze, what a shame he's injured. 4 goals, 8 assists, 125 points, 32% goal involvement and 75% injured. I think that was right. Or 75% off. Might have to check that stat. I'm not sure if that's correct. I'll correct it if I need to in the in Twitter or my threads. Gaeta, 124 points. Benteke, 110 goals, 2 assists, 106 points. He was rotated 53% of the time and he still got 106 points, boys. That, to me, made me look up a little bit, and everybody else under 100 points. I'll shout the correspondence out, and then I'll go into the XGs and things. So we have FPL _ Eze, I think writes for All About FPL as well, and also FPL _ Serpent for their views. So thank you very much, guys. And very quickly on the numbers and FDR, I have them last for attack at home, 4.5. Defensively, I have them 12th, 3.6 at home. And away, I have them 16th in attack and 17th in defence. The fixture difficulty with respect to combinations, which you'll see across the top of the screen, best treated for attack, they're treated by Fix at 13th. Worst, that's by predicted results. And worse was Hub at 20th. That was goal conceded. So 17.3. They're a negative with respect to my fixture difficulty on average. So quite a big negative overall. Defensively, they're best treated by Frazier at 16th and worst by Hub at 20th. We have nearly all fixture difficulties. There's very little variance here. Nobody likes them. XG, at home last year, 20th, less than a goal a game. Conceded 15th, 1.5 goals a game, roughly. And in 1920, when there were fans in the ground, they were still 20th with respect to XG. And they were 11th, so slightly better defensively. And away last season, 16th and at 4.1. And Coles conceded 17th at 4.5. And within the and when fans were in the ground in 1920, their XG was 18th at 1.04. That was away. And expected goals conceded 14th, which is 1.72. My notes here, guys, say this is one team that was crying out for a change. That's my perspective anyway. So it's you, isn't it, Nima?
It is, yeah. So
I was trying to think who it was. It's so early. I'm really struggling today. Sorry.
Don't worry. I'm struggling for all the wrong reasons because it's so late. So I think just to give a really high level overview, I think to start with, thanks for your stats. That's really nice work as always, Mariner. In terms of Palace, I guess there's a lot of uncertainty around the club at the moment. So these coming weeks, these final kind of 27 days till the Premier League starts, they're going to be absolutely key. And I imagine Vieira was probably made some promises on bringing in decent players. And from what we've seen so far, they've had some real bargains. We'll talk about the ins and outs in a moment, but I just want to give a high-level overview first. I think if they can get other players to add to the existing talent that's there in Zaha, Easy when he's back from injury, Olis, their new signing, Mitchell, now that Van Aanholt is gone, and Gaeta in goal, then I think they could actually have a solid season. Historically, I'm actually like someone who studied in high school in Croydon, so Palace should really be my local team. That's who I should probably be supporting, but they weren't in the Premier League. I don't remember when I picked the Premier League club, so we'll leave that bygones be bygones. Now, as for Selhurst Park, I think Hodgson, he brought a lot of stability, and it was always going to be risky moving away from him, but it had to happen if they want to do anything like their former days and try to target a top 10 finisher. I think Palace historically have been quite a nice family, grassroots club, do a lot for the local community. And last season, it was genuinely starting to be worrying. Like, I thought they'd get relegated. They survived. It is time to move on. Now, there's some stuff in the chat about Vieira being sacked by December. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I also kind of think that too, personally. I do think they are a team to target with captaincy. But before I give my own negative opinions, I will talk about the correspondence a little bit and what they've given us in these amazing interviews, because there are some good assets to have. And I think at the minimum, you could actually start the season with their goalkeeper, Gaeta, at 4.5. He's been given a downgrade in price, and you know, he's a save machine, and I don't see too much wrong with him, considering that there's maybe three or four viable 4.5 mil keepers. He's one of those I would consider alongside kind of Sanchez and Backman. There aren't really, not really anyone else I can think of I would consider at that price range. Now, in terms of kind of what Vieira wants, so he's got a lot of young players who are very promising. They have signed at least, as we said, for a ridiculous sum of money. I actually do not understand how they got him for only 8 million. So he had 7 goals and 12 assists last season in the Championship. He created 84 chances, attempted 54 take-ons. So these are all very impressive numbers. It's quite reminiscent of Easy. And he could be quite a creative force in the Palace team. At 5.5 million, if he's a starting creative midfielder for Palace when they have a good run of fixtures, he's quite nice. I think, like with any of these teams with a new coach, let's watch the preseason. Let's see how they play. With Easy out injured, I imagine at least starts. I don't really like the Palace fixtures at this beginning, hence why I said Gaeta is the only player I would look at. But Billy FPL Serpent, who's kindly given us some information, so he actually noticed that from game week 9 onwards, their fixtures get much better. So not only do we have preseason to wait and see, but we have almost 8 game weeks to watch the Palace team, see how Vieira does, wait for a couple of international breaks, and worst case, he's either going to look like he's getting sacked, or it looks like we need to buy Mitchell, Gaeta, double off on the defence like I did last season. I know Mariner used to laugh at me on the Compass show for having Ward and someone else. I had double defense. I remember that much. And
you had the keeper as well, didn't you? You get that as well.
That's it. Yeah, and I had triple Palace going into the final, like 5-6 game weeks, and Mariner couldn't believe what he was seeing on a wild card, no less. Yeah. So yeah. Like that's saying a lot. I know.
But look, I also took the mick out of people who owned Benteke, and look what he did. Surya was one of the players who owned Benteke, and I mean, he went crazy towards the end of the season.
What I will say for Guaita is, as far as a keeper, and if we're looking around that time frame, Nima, is he had the highest XG prevented of any player last season. So he prevented 12.5 XG over the season, which
wow,
is huge.
That's crazy.
Huge. He took away 12.5 XG from the shots. So I think he could be a good keeper because of the saves.
That's quite exciting. Something else I want to say. So obviously there's been talks of this Chelsea centre back as well, another young player. So I think it's Mark. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. I think it's Guehi, like Guehi.
I'm not going to try, but someone's already taken the mick out of you in the chat, saying you've just butchered Eze's name.
Eze, yeah, I know. I called him Easy. I'm thinking of Easy E out here, but Easy. I blame Gabe. Whenever an American is around, I somehow end up with some LA West Coast slang. But
West Side.
West Side. As Abby G would say.
I'm trying to find who it was. It was the Anthony Chung. Nima butchering Eze's name.
Nima butchering you are as well, a three-letter Chris. Word. It's a three-letter word. Nima's butchering.
Well, I butcher everybody's name, mate. It's no worries. I'm from Grimsby. That's what happens.
Well, I know no one's going to try for the Mark, the new Chelsea centre back. But
no, I'm not even going there. It's like it took me 6 weeks to pronounce Adarabayo last year.
I remember you called him Tosin for about 6 episodes. Yeah, <didn't you? laughs> But so I think something else I've seen as well. So there's also talks of another young English player that's going to go for under 10 million to Palace. So it's City's Morgan Rogers. And I think a friend of mine messaged me and he said that if Football Manager is anything to go by, that makes them very excited. So I think Palace are rebuilding and we really need to watch who they sign and watch the preseason. And apart from kind of the confirmed Olis and the Chelsea centre-back who are in, there's a few outs. So lots of players' contracts finished. So they're all being released. So we've got Van Aanholt, Dan, Sacco, McCarthy, Klein, and Wickham. He's expecting all of them to be released to free up funds. So, you know, that's quite a significant amount of players who, under Hodgson, some of them were kind of first teamers. He expects that they'll re-sign the likes of McArthur, Ward, Cahill, and Townsend.
I think this is really a huge club. Hasn't Ward just been signed? I think he's just going to be priced.
Has he extended now? Okay.
Yeah, Ward re-signed.
Yeah.
Nice. So I think the other thing I'll say is that so Hennessy and Henderson have also left. So two goalkeepers have left, which only has Remy Matthews in as a sub. So that's not going to obviously affect Gator, but it just means that there aren't really any viable options there to take his spot. Whereas with Watford, obviously there was talks of Foster saying he wouldn't play at a club if he wasn't first choice. But from what we understand, Backman is probably going to start the season. So you don't really want to go into a season where you've got rotating goalkeepers, as I found out with the McCarthy-Forster combination of Southampton last year. You do not. And what was it? Mendy and Kepa as well. So, yeah, that's never a good look. So I think at least we know Gator's nailed, hence what I was saying. So now the injury to Eze. So he ruptured his Achilles. Obviously, it looks like he's going to be out till after Christmas, I imagine. It is a massive blow for them. It's going to impact the whole squad. So I think the fact that they looked so bad on your FDR and on all the metrics, that combined with one of their best players missing, that's quite important and key. So the fact that they got the bad fixtures and we can wait till game week 9, let's kind of wait and see how it goes and see how they fare. But Benteke, he re-signed an extension. Another Palace supporter I know, he was kind of saying that he just really hates Benteke. Always shows up when it's contract renewal time. He does really well for a few months and then he kind of just disappears. So that's...
That might change my views on him then, but I would say maybe another Zaha, is he?
I think so.
Transfer window.
That's how you know it's summer, right? When Zaha's looking for a move away from Crystal Palace.
But interestingly enough, again, you know, there's comments from the guys about you know, if they're getting crosses into the box, then Benteke is going to benefit from that. So
yeah, so maybe we should talk a little bit about Vieira.
Target man, right?
Yeah, so I think talking a little bit more about Vieira then. So he likes possession style play, from what I understand. So he wants to keep the ball. He likes to methodically build his attacks, and he does target the wings, as you say, so kind of encouraging the fullbacks to overlap. So that's quite exciting for Mitchell again, I think. Now, he does want the wingers to be delivering crosses early or bringing the ball inside. So I think with this in mind, it really does suit someone like Zaha, actually, because he'll be given more freedom to attack and show off all of his flair. But that does mean that, as you say, rightly so Benteke is going to benefit from that. And this should be a very different Palace to what we're used to, and we should see which assets could be fruitful to us. Defensively, I can't imagine they keep many clean sheets, but I do like Gaeta specifically just for those kind of saves that he can make. And the XG prevented, as Gabe says, that's pretty significant. The formation that everyone who's written to us seems to be speaking about is a 4-3-3. They're talking a lot about Vieira liking a 4-3-3, but actually, I think Gabe did some digging, and we found a couple seasons back, the 2019-20 season, his most popular formation was actually a 4-1-4-1. He used that 19% of the time, and he used a 4-4-1-1 16% of the time. In both these formations, there was either only one guy over the halfway line in attack, or two in the 1-1. So I don't think it's going to be as expansive as it's being made out. I think it's going to be more of a kind of fullbacks overlapping wingers and crossing balls in early to Benteke. I think they're going to be quite solid still, and I hope they stay solid, because everyone seems to believe it could go two ways for Palace. Either they have a fantastic season and finish top half, or they completely implode for trying to go for a more expansive or more counterable system than what they're used to under Hodgson, which has been quite solid. But he does like to play through the middle. I think that's what I would conclude. So a lot of his plays end up with the ball coming back into the middle, either through the wings or by driving forward through the middle. So I'm not convinced that kind of 4-3-3 is going to be as common as people are expecting. And I know Gabe mentioned that Palace's players and squad doesn't necessarily lend itself to a 4-3-3 like a City or a Liverpool.
Okay. So I think, okay, so still, like I say, lots of things as usual. I think, I don't want to become Sleepy Joe here and not predict anything like Gabe.
That's my role. Stay in your lane.
I would love to see Palace, just for my friends I got to know when I used to live in London. I had a lot of Palace mates who were Palace fans. For them alone, I would love to see them get back to actually seeing some football, which is better. I am a little bit on the fence. I am a bit worried about them personally. I love the positivity coming out of the fans and seeing that they're hopeful. But a serpent sums it up quite nicely. We could go one of two ways: surprise everybody, or get punished. And I think that's the way to say. So to summarise them, boys, buy, sell, wait, or buy, wait, or avoid. I think personally for me, they are a stay away.
I think they're a strong avoid until at least game week 9, when we know more. Maybe Gaeta, if you really want to take a punt instead of Sanchez or Backman.
Hopefully, I look at my team at the end of the season and I've never owned a Palace player. No, but there are teams that are hard to avoid. And I think you could go through the season without owning a Palace player and you'd be grand.
I personally really liked it. I love to see these up and coming players. Eze, it took him a while to settle in, but when he did, he looked interesting. We're going to see the same perhaps with Elise, who knows. But, I mean, look, the point is that, and I keep coming back to this, these are players who have come out of the Championship. There's a big gap, right? It's going to take them time to settle in, as far as I'm concerned. So, no, I'm quite happy to follow you, Hippo, is that I would be surprised if I own one.
Do you remember our friend last year, guys, Dylan, who captained Eze for his huge haul?
Yeah,
I can't Yeah. Gabe, are you okay for a minute or two? I realize we've run out. We're over time.
Yeah, we. I am a little bit over time, but I can sneak the next one in.
All right, I'll put this slide on. I'll put this slide on for you. Otherwise, we would cover it ourselves for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, right, fans matter.
Fans matter. So I did some digging. This is actually from an old article from elpais.com, and it was published in January. So it doesn't have data from January to the present. But I'll just go through it quickly. They did an overall study of how home field or how fans matter in games. So before the pandemic, the home team overall in this study won 45% of matches, the away team 29% of matches, and they drew 26% of matches. So it's a 16% point difference between the home wins and the away wins with fans. During confinement with empty stadiums, the locals won 41% of the time compared to 45, and the visitors won 33% of the time. So that 16-point difference was halved, and it becomes an 8-point difference without fans in the stadium. They tied the same. Now, they also did the study, and they narrowed it to the Premier League, and the difference was even bigger. So the home advantage plummets behind closed doors by 16 percentage points. So it's a 46 for the home versus 30 for the away, compared to that's with fans, 46% home, 30 away, compared to 42% and 37%. So let's see, behind closed doors, the home team is whistled for 10% more fouls per game against than before COVID. So with fans, they get less fouls called against them, which obviously helps them win as well. This is all tied together. They're whistled for 12.73 fouls with fans versus 14.8 without. And they show 22% more yellow cards as well. And then the red cards, it's increase of 33%, but the numbers are so low that we don't need to get into them. On the other hand...
Oops. Sorry, my fault.
for the visitor, that's only for the home. For the visitor, there's very little change. If with the public, they saw 2.10 yellow cards per game, and then behind closed doors, it was 2.09. Red cards, there was absolutely no change, and the decisions were balanced for the local and the visitor. So just to get a little bit of an idea of how much fans matter, and fans will be back at the stadium. So just factor that into your selections. Yeah.
And I would add something further. There are no away fans going to be in the ground till Christmas, at least. Mm-hmm. So not only is it's going to be like some almost home, home advantage, plus potentially, rather than just, so I think, and again, this is where there's been loads of debate about fixture difficulty. You know me, I love that. And I think this is where the fixture difficulties are going to be most challenged for the start of the season, is trying to work out what is going to happen with fans in the ground. And I think hopefully you've seen, just with the example of the four teams that we've put up today, guys, that some teams look like they'll benefit from fans and other teams may not. We haven't covered West Ham, but they were an example, I think, from memory, who haven't particularly done well in front of their own fans in the past.
Mariner, I need to interrupt you because I got to run.
That's fine. See you soon.
It was a pleasure, everybody. Thank you, everyone in the chat. The chat was amazing, by the way. We had almost 30 people in there for a while, so appreciate all the super fans as well.
Go and enjoy your dinner with your grandma.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
So, guys, just to wrap up then, any perspective on this, on the fans?
I think it's definitely going to be a factor. Like, the stories that Gabriel has presented there about, you're talking about your weight and home field advantage around 16%. I follow a fellow on Twitter, Sir Talp. He runs the FPL Optimized, and that's how he's factoring in home field advantage at the minute. So I think it's fair. And we've been talking previously about we're not going to maybe see away fans for a period of time. I do think it's going to be fairly stark. Like, we saw fans at the Euros and we saw the bounce that the players had when they were feeding off the energy of the crowd. So,
Yeah, I mean, there's just your general comments. I mean, Bungle said the West Ham fans are brutal. They'll do better with only away fans allowed. That's a bit extreme, I think. But, I mean, look, I think that's the point, isn't it? That, you know, some teams are going to do far better with fans in the ground than not. I mean, just think about the stadiums, which, you know, which ones would I think of where, we'll, you know, you'll see a possibly much more difficult, like Burnley. People think Burnley is an easy place to go. It's not. It's even harder with fans. You know, I mentioned Everton as another example. I dare say there's a few more. Guys, to wrap up, have it, anything which, how do we close this section off? What's new managers? There's four. Okay. So out of those new managers, which one I'm going to, we haven't at all brought this point up, but I'm going to try and get a prediction. Since Sleepy Joe's gone away, Sleepy Joe's gone, so I'm going to try and get a prediction. Which team, which manager is going to be, is going to finish highest out of those four, or, and which manager is going to get sacked first? There we go, two.
I know who Hibbert is going to say, Vieira.
he's muted. You're muted. You've muted yourself now.
No, sorry. No, I think out of the options we have here, I think Vieira's gone possibly by Christmas, and I think Nuno's maybe going to finish highest. I think Nuno's being downplayed a wee bit. I think he's a bit better than what everybody thinks. But Benitez, I think he'll play a cautious style. I don't think the fan base were too appreciative of the appointment, to be honest with you, but I think he's got a lot to do to turn them around, but I don't know. I think Nuno and Patrick Vieira gone.
I think, you know, Spurs is a tough gig, right? It's a tough gig. It could be even tougher if Kane goes. You know, for me, anyone who is like approached about 7th, 8th, 9th or 10th down the list of people who, you know, you might want as your manager is perhaps on a bit of a slippery slope right to start with. I hope it works for him, to be fair. I do agree. I think Vieira's in trouble. I tell you, I was nearly going to say is if he starts badly, Benitez could be in serious bother very quickly. That's my perspective.
I don't think Everton is, well, I don't think the hierarchy will turn on the manager as such. The fans might, but
I'm talking about the fans. I think
the fans could turn on him. Like, you know, it's
that would be my concern. But yeah, and I think who's going to be given? I think Wolves are probably going to be the most patient.
I think they are naturally anyway. Like, I don't think Wolves are going to. I think Nuno was here maybe 3+ years. And I don't think they're going to bring Lagan and suddenly just kick him to curb. Like, so I think no matter what happens, unless he nearly gets him relegated, I think he'll be kind of fairly safe.
Yeah. That's the first opportunity to be thrown off the screen. So, right, guys, I think that does us. We'll just quickly just remind you about all about FPL.com. So just one second. Here we go. If it's going to play, come on.
Are you craving more FPL content? Then look no further than allaboutfpl.com. Head over there for weekly articles from some of the top content creators on the planet. So what are you waiting for? Head over to allaboutfpl.com, the website for all your FPL needs.
There we go, boys. So thanks to allaboutfpl.com for their support. If you want to check out them, they've got tons of great stuff on their website, and we're linked off there as well, which is very nice these days. I think apart from that, guys, not much else to say apart from thank you very much, as always. It's a little bit late out there, a little bit early here. It's just getting daylight here now in Singapore. But as always, it's a pleasure to have you.
Always.
Okay, guys, good to see you.
You look dead, Neva. You're okay.
No, I was looking at the chat. I was replying to the chat. No, I was going to say just a bold prediction, guys. So I think that Benitez and Everton will finish highest of the new managers. And I think that Nuno will be sacked first.
There we go.
Gone on, Matt.
I'm only saying this so that 1 year from now, if it happens on the 1% chance, I can try and get like a quick follower boost by saying, look how maverick I was. I called this before anyone on the planet.
Well, this is more hope than expectation, but I'm predicting we get to 700 subscribers hopefully fairly soon. Please subscribe. Please hit the like button. Please leave some comments. Please go and pick us up wherever you are walking the dog or whatever. Stick us in your ears or, you know.
And review on iTunes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. WFH, or, which I actually read as WF, WTF, when you posted it on Twitter the other day. If you're working from home, then, you know, again, perfect. Get us on in the background. Guys, we'll be back next week. I think we're starting to get into more nitty gritty. I think this is the last of our high level pods for the preseason. So next week we'll start getting into some more detail. But apart from that, as I say, I'm FPL Mariner at FPL Mariner, Hibbo at FPL underscore FPL, Sean there, Nima at FPL Nima. Nima, have a wonderful honeymoon.
Enjoy every moment that you like.
Absolutely. And guys, we will catch you all very soon. Goodbye.